You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. I hope that you had a great weekend, and I hope that you watched the unbelievable documentary Tina on HBO about Tina Turner. I'm serious. I am now worshiping in the church of Tina Turner. This is such an inspiring documentary about the megastar celebrating 81 years before she quietly slips out of the public eye for good. Tina Turner is an incredible singer, songwriter, and actress. Known as the Queen of Rock and Roll, she rose to prominence as the front woman of Ike and Tina Turner before launching a successful career as a solo performer. She began her career with Ike Turner's King of Rhythm in 1957. Under the name Little Ann, she appeared on the first record, Box Stop, in 1958. In 1960, she was introduced as Tina Turner with a hit single, A Fool in Love. And the duo went on to become one of the most formidable live acts in history. They released hits such as It's Gonna Work Out Fine, River Deep, Mountain High, and the Grammy-winning song Proud Mary, which we all love. In the 1980s, she launched one of the greatest comebacks in music history. Her 1984 multi-platinum album Private Dancer contained her hit song What's Love Got to Do With It, which won the Grammy Award for Record of the Year and became her first and only number one on the Billboard Hot 100. And at age 44, she was the oldest female solo artist to hit the top Hot 100. So having sold over 100 million records, she's one of the best-selling recording artists of all time, has received 12 Grammy Awards, which include 8 competitive awards, 3 Grammy Hall of Fame Awards, and a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, and was the first Black artist and first female to cover Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone ranked her among the 100 greatest artists of all time and the 100 greatest singers of all time. So this is an incredible documentary because it navigates the traumas of Tina's childhood abandonment and adult abuse in the public eye. She says in it, I had an abusive life, and says to the Academy Award-winning directors Dan Lindsay and TJ Martin, there's no other way to tell the story. It's a reality. It's a truth. So it retraces the music icon legends, childhood neglect, and hard scrapple steps through the domestic violence, sexual abuse, and suicide attempts she survived through her 16-year marriage to her late husband, Ike Turner. What I love is that the filmmakers have done a really great job of being sensitive. They say that there was a definite hesitation in following those other mediums and telling her story, but they were intent not to make the film a pure exploration of her trauma. But in early discussions with her, what they came to realize was that the trauma is still very present in her life, and it's always kind of bubbling underneath the surface. So in the first conversations, they didn't have to bring up Ike. It just came out naturally. And she told them that if she thinks about it too much or has to talk about her past, he starts to come into her dreams or nightmares. So it's an unvarnished look, but it's a very sensitive look. And I think that anybody who knows somebody that's survived abuse, they would appreciate it. So it's a remarkable story. Her talent is unbelievable. And it's just a really great window into her life. And then you get to find out that she's just so happily married, living in Zurich, Switzerland, to her husband, Erwin Bach. She suffered a stroke in 2013 and was diagnosed with intestinal cancer in 2016 and considered assisted suicide before her husband donated a kidney for transplant surgery in 2017. But health-wise, last we were in contact with her and her husband, according to the filmmakers, she was in both good spirits and feeling healthy. So her announced exits with the musical, the Tina Turner musical in 2019, and now this HBO documentary are more a matter of gracefully bowing out of Tina Turner's persona and enjoying a quiet, private life in her retirement in Switzerland. I cried my face off by the end. You cannot help but just like wanting to listen to every song she's ever had, watch every movie, read every interview. I just think she is unbelievable. So I cannot discuss it enough. I just loved it, and I want you to take a look at it. This episode is really great because I've got co-CEOs of Magical Elves, Joe Sharon and Casey Criley, talking about two of their huge hits. One is called Nailed It, and the other is Top Chef. Nailed It is a comedy first, cooking second, genre-breaking series where home bakers impossibly have complex concept cakes to bake and with hilariously bad results. Lord knows I've been there where I see something on Pinterest or Instagram and I'm like, I'm going to try to make it and it looks like a car accident. So this isn't a great show where your kids can even watch it, where you are watch people attempting desperately to recreate something with the worst results. And you feel great about it. And the host is really funny. And it's a great show. And then Top Chef features chefs competing against each other in a culinary challenge. They're judged by a panel of professional chefs and other notables from the food and wine industry, with one or more contestants eliminated in each episode. You really are seeing some of the best chefs that are creating the most insane things out of just a couple ingredients. It's really spellbinding. And I have to tell you, I'm not really a foodie, but I enjoy watching it because it does, you know, spur a little of creativity in the viewer. And then I asked Lauren and Chandler, sisters and co-hosts of the Pop Apologist podcast, to review Seeking Sister Wives. It is this insane TLC reality show about the lives of polygamous families. And ultimately, it's a husband who wants to bring new wives into the family and their journey. It's crazy. So I think that's another one you've got to take a look at. By the way, you have to join my newsletter to get my list every week of what to watch this week. And you can go to katecasey.substack.com. It's free. It just comes to your mailbox every Monday. So you're going to have a cheat sheet of what to watch all week. So here we go with a great episode. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us on the show. This is Casey. And Joe and I sound a lot alike. So we often will reference ourselves so you know who's talking.
I've got a ton of questions about these two shows. Nailed It Double Trouble is back March 26th. Tell me how the concept for Nailed It and then for Nailed It Double Trouble came to be.
This is Joe. So one of the things that's really important to us at Magical Elves is that we're always sort of looking for ideas and developing ideas that feel like they're the first of its kind and genre breaking. And we don't want to sort of be second to market on anything. And so this, quite frankly, just came out of a brainstorm that we were having in our development department where the focus was comedy, but it was what's trending, what's happening in the ether, what can we pull from sort of pop culture that feels really current. And that led us to Pinterest, that were somebody making a cake to try and replicate a beautiful, let's say, cake look like a sheep or a hedgehog, and they would try to make it themselves and it would be a disaster, and they would sort of put a picture next to it and say nailed it. And we just started looking at those and dying laughing for, quite frankly, hours. We were like there's something here. Like, there's definitely a show in this. How do we the people who do Top Chef flip a cooking show completely on its head, mm-hmm. and celebrate failure mm-hmm. in a way that is inclusive. So, you know, people who love to bake but aren't good at it. And how do we look at this show as a comedy, like first and foremost? And that was sort of how it was born, really.
Also a celebration of the people that are sick and tired of the Martha Stewart mothers of Instagram who have like perfect sugar cookies for every event at the school. And that most of us try to replicate these ridiculous recipes and do it with such failure. So I salute that, get it. And I think it's a really clever way because it really is a comedy first, cooking second, genre breaking series that you've so brilliantly put together. Tell me how you found the hosts.
Well, we have an amazing head of casting, Samantha Hanks, who is an absolute rock star and sort of guides us in a lot of our casting, both for hosts and contestants. We knew we wanted somebody that was funny. We purposely created a format that was not overcomplicated so that we could find a host who could come in and fill the space. Somebody that was going to bring their own sense of humor, their own personality, and help create the tone of this show. And we focused a lot on comedians. And ultimately, you know, Nicole's name came up and we all loved her immediately. And, you know, to credit to her, she did exactly what we were looking for and more. She made it her own. She created this tone for the show that has really resonated with people. But I think what we loved about Nicole the most was she has a way of having a good time and making people laugh without making fun of them. And it's a fine line for a comedian. And that was really important for us. There's plenty of people who make me laugh and make us laugh, but it's at the expense of other people. And that's fine. It just didn't feel like that was right for this show. So tonally, we knew we had to find somebody who was going to have a good time with these people and not make them, you know, not make them the butt of the jokes, if that makes sense.
So some have asked me to ask you whether or not there's an ingredient missing from any of these recipes, because no one seems to totally nail the recipe. Are we giving them the full recipe when they're trying to duplicate the recipe?
Well, Kate, they get the full recipe, but it is very bare bones. It's, you know, a pinch of sugar, add water. So you get all the ingredients, but it's like a bullet point list of how to make it versus paragraphs and explicit details.
Amazing. So for this new spinoff, there are two clueless cake artists teaming up and the reveals are even more ridiculous. Give me just a little something to look forward to. Like, I don't even know if it's a description of a cake. What do I have to look forward to? Because you know that I'm going to be watching this with my kids.
I would just say this season is so fun. We're so excited for it to air. We came up with the idea because we realized that this is what people were doing out in the real world. They were having their own Nailed It parties. The moms and their kids were playing Nailed It at home, and people were doing it in pairs and in groups. And we wanted to really take that and mirror it on the show. And I think we got more than we even bargained for, because the energy and the comedy, everything's double. The energy, the comedy, the fails, it's just kind of bursting with fun and personality. Casey and I are always like, how do we go back to non-doubles after this, because it's so fun. But we're so excited for people to see it, because I think it feels really energized from top to bottom and packed with comedy.
I can imagine you're overwhelmed with people that want desperately to be a contestant on the show. How do you find the perfect contestants?
Well, Samantha Hanks, who's our head of casting, is a genius at this. But you know, it's this fine line of people who love to bake and but aren't great at it, but also it's their ability to have fun and not take it too seriously that's really, really important. Ultimately, everything we do, we want it to feel aspirational and fun and have a certain sort of lightness to it. And so it's kind of looking at everybody through that lens. I think it's interesting because when I think of Magical Elves and all the people that work at Magical Elves, we're kind of this like collection of unique, a little bit offbeat, hardworking, passionate people. And I feel like we infuse that in all of the casting that we do. And trying not to, it's so easy to typecast in reality TV and look for those specific archetypes, but there's nothing we love more than celebrating somebody who marches to the beat of their own drum. And I feel like nailed it. We just get to do that wall to wall. And it's really fun to find those people.
Yeah. And I think what was surprising to us when the first season premiered is how viewers really loved a show that celebrates failure. Mm-hmm. And it is so challenging, I think, for many people to take the risk to fail, which often leads to greatness. And I think this show celebrates that. And everyone is willing to come on and participate and be open to failing.
I'm so excited. So that it premieres this week. Now you also have Top Chef, which will be premiering, I believe, April 1st. Is that correct?
Yep.
And tell me a little bit about this season. What makes it different? Obviously, we're filming this during a tricky time. How did you choose the city and what is going to be most unique about the season?
We're really excited about this season for a few reasons. Portland is a city we always wanted to explore on Top Chef, and we've discussed it over many years. And we felt it was just the right time to go to the city. What we love about Portland is, you know, it definitely has a food, beverage, and dining scene that has a great reputation. Also, they love to utilize local ingredients and are all about sustainability. And we feel like that's really interesting and important at this point in time when it comes to food. And the other thing we're really excited about this season is that we're bringing back Top Chef All-Stars as judges. And the chefs are phenomenal. And I think it's one of our most talented groups of chefs. And we're really excited about all the different ethnic cuisines we're going to be exploring.
Do you guys feel like this show destroyed you because you guys are the most judgy McJudgersons when it comes to food? Like you go to a restaurant and they're like, Joe and Casey are such a nightmare because they're going to make the waitress take this back. Like, are you just so difficult because you've had the best food in the whole world from these incredible chefs?
Casey and I are two of the most laid back people. Probably enjoy sitting and eating a pizza and hot wings more than anything else, so to be funny. Honest. But no, it is a privilege and an honor to be able to eat the food that these people make and to be a part of it. But we love the high and the low for sure.
There has to be one recipe that you still think of, like you're daydreaming about that one recipe after all these years. Like for each of you, what is that one recipe?
We actually have a rule on the food that started in season one where we don't taste the food.
Yeah.
And part of that has to do with fairness. And for me, part of that has to do with my weight. It's a slippery slope if you're, you know, tasting 12 dishes.
Yeah, so, totally.
So
right. You're right.
Actually, we leave that up to the judges.
But the getting to go to any city across the country and know that we have top chef restaurants there and to be able to go in and eat their food, that's where we kind of get to explore it. And it's awesome.
This is a very random question, but when they do the quick fire and they put the food out, are the judges at all worried that they have to eat that food right away to really be able to adequately judge it? Or like, I'm worried that it's sitting out for a hot minute and the ingredients in it it won't taste the same if it's been sitting out.
One of our biggest priorities on the show is to have the judges eat food as quickly as possible. And it's a lot of pressure on our crew to make sure they're kind of doing their blocking dance quickly for that exact reason. So it's something that we take a lot of pride in, is how quickly we try and make sure the judges taste the food.
How many of them come prepared in their, you know, downloading and just in their brain or in a notebook dessert recipes? Because I feel like they're all fantastic chefs, but then when it gets to the point where they have to make like a cake, they're all like, oh God, I don't know how to make it.
Yeah, baking has always been challenging for savory chefs, but that's what makes it a challenge. And I think the chefs should know by now from past seasons, they should come in prepared with a dessert.
Now, one of my favorite guests I've ever interviewed is Richard Blaze. Who are some of the people that you have look back fondly and say, this show really changed the trajectory of their careers and their lives, and we're so glad that we were a part of that?
I feel like there's so many chefs that Top Chef has impacted their career trajectory. It would be tough to single out one. I think chefs have gone on to receive James Beard nominations, huge accolades, but also have seen tremendous boost to their restaurants in terms of people traveling to experience those restaurants. And we have great relationships with all the chefs that have been on Top Chef. And I think part of that is because of what they've gained from participating in the show.
Fill in the blank. The biggest surprise, people would be so surprised to know that Top Chef judges blank. Like, what would that be? Something that's like very surprising that people wouldn't necessarily know and understand, but is such a big part of their job.
I think one of the things people would be really surprised to know is in certain challenges, you know, when you watch the show, judges' table is often about 10 minutes of content in an episode, and you look at a deliberation and that's 2 or 3 minutes. But in fact, with some challenges, because there's very different opinions on which dish is the most successful or the least successful, is those judges' tables can sometimes be anywhere from 4 to 6 hours.
Oh my God. Wow.
And we've even, many seasons ago, by the time we finished judges' table, the sun was coming up. It was 6 a.m.
Holy crap. That's like insane. Wow. And then conversely, what would be something surprising for people to know about being a contestant? Because this is like such an incredible opportunity. It must be really stressful, but what an opportunity. So what is something that people would be surprised to know about being a contestant?
I think it's extremely challenging in terms of coming up with an amazing dish with the challenge parameters and the time constraints. But I think what we've heard time and time again from chefs who go on the show is what an incredible journey it is to be given those parameters, and how often those parameters sparks passion and creativity as a chef. That is something that they take beyond the show once they leave.
Is there one ingredient where the contestants are like, I just can make anything, but if I have to use that ingredient, I don't know how I can go on. Like the one they complain about the most, like this is the worst thing to cook with.
It's a good question.
I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
There definitely has been the risotto curse. And the scallops curse. And what's interesting about those ingredients or those dishes is that in many respects, they're simple ingredients or simple dishes, you know, on first look. But in fact, to get them right is incredibly challenging.
I assume so. Okay, well, will you leave me with the one moment from the show Top Chef where you just look back fondly like that was one of the greatest moments on TV?
For me, it usually happens when we're watching it, because in the moment it's really stressful and exhausting.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I would say I think there's two moments that come to mind for me. One was last season, which was our all-star season, and our finale was in Italy. And it was such a beautiful landscape and a wonderful location for a finale. And those three final chefs were so talented. And then to have Melissa King win it, I became very emotional for two reasons. One, because Melissa won, and she's such an incredible chef and such a wonderful person. But I was also emotional because I was heartbroken for those that didn't win.
Yeah.
And it had been such a long, epic journey for them. And there's always that bittersweet when you crown a winner. But in particular for a season of All Stars. And there's also just a feeling every time you complete a season, the experience of the crew really mirrors the experience of the chefs. And the crew on Top Chef is amazing, and they are so passionate about the show. And the level that the chefs work at, the crew works out as well. So you are left at the end of every season with this sense of accomplishment that is very fulfilling and emotional. And I think the other moment I would cite was this current season that is about to air. Having to produce Top Chef in a moment in time, in terms of a pandemic and the Black Lives Matter movement and the forest fires that we experienced while we were shooting. It was even more challenging, and to have succeeded and made a fantastic season with really talented chefs was a huge accomplishment, and something that I think for me is one of the proudest moments I've had in all the seasons of Chef I've worked on.
Yeah, I got really emotional just watching the trailer when you see everybody on the bridge. I just, this feeling came over. I was like, wow, like, I can't believe we pulled that off in this moment in time, and what a feat that was. And I just felt so incredibly proud of everybody for what had happened. But I felt really emotional watching that myself.
I'm so grateful for your time. I mean, female co-CEOs, you guys are just killing it. And what an honor and a privilege. So thank you for your time. And I can't wait for the show.
Awesome. Thank you, Kate. We appreciate it. And thanks for being a fan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Seeking Sister Wife is back. The TLC reality TV series about the lives of polygamous families returns for a third season. Two families from the show's previous season will return, while three new families have also joined the cast. This show is bonkers. Lauren and Chandler are two sisters from Orange County and the hosts of Pop Apologist podcast, which I love. And I've roped them into watching the season premiere of this unbelievably ridiculous show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. We are so happy to be here.
I mean, honestly, we've missed you since last week,
truly.
Well, how familiar were you with polygamy and polygamous families before I roped you into this?
It's a great question. We actually grew up Mormon. And so polygamy, you know, runs back through our family lineage.
Right, at the roots.
So it runs deep in the Bledsoe family, you know, genealogy, if you will. And we are sister wives addicts.
Definitely.
So we are familiar, Kate. We are familiar and ready to discuss.
We grew up being asked if our dad had multiple wives. So, you know.
He does not, well, for the record.
How far back does this go in your lineage? Like, what are we talking about? Like 100 years ago or like, you know, 25 years ago? Your uncle's a polygamist.
To be clear, no one in our direct line was a polygamist. That being said, the religion that we were raised with, I mean...
No, that's absolutely not true.
Wait,
we were
really?
Pioneer history and all those people were polygamists.
Not all the pioneers were polygamists.
So this is how fun our podcast is. It's just basically me and Chandler fighting about our, you know,
our
about random things. But yes, we know. So basically the polygamist side of our family, I don't know any true details, but it just was when Mormons were practicing polygamy,
right?
Early, and our Mormon ancestors.
We have early Mormon ancestors, and some of the early Mormons were polygamists.
There
so
you have it.
When you watch some of the polygamy shows, do you, like, in your mind, and given that your family connection to this, do you think of polygamy as a bunch of women wearing prairie dresses with French braids, or are you like the more modern look where it's like a t-shirt with a tank top over it, and they can still like have a cocktail every now and then?
I would say we definitely draw nearer to the first version, the
Correct.
Little House on the Prairie,
mm-hmm. yes.
The strange hair, the long dresses.
The serious cult vibes.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I think rings the most true for me when it comes to all things polygamy. It's, you know, being fully, I guess, immersed in like an institution or an organization that has brainwashed you completely to making poor life choices. And so the whole like tank tops over the t-shirts variety of modern people practicing polygamy is a little jarring to us.
Right.
It is interesting. So last year, only the Snowdens had a happy ending. However, that was a short-lived as their chosen wife, Vanessa, left after their wedding ceremony. This time they have two women that are courting. So there's questions. So let's go through some of the couples and I need your feedback. Okay.
Oh yeah. Would love.
Garrick and Danielle Merrifield are new to the show this season. They're devout Christians who've been married for 13 years and have two kids. Now, he became interested in the idea of bringing in another wife into the relationship and eventually convinced Danielle to get on board. But viewers are worried that he isn't to be trusted, especially now that he's convinced Danielle to divorce him so that he can marry Roberta, a Brazilian woman who needs a fiancé visa to be able to live in the U.S. Which, so this is almost like 90-day fiancé meets sister wife. Now, here's the glitch.
Yes.
She can't speak any English. She speaks only Portuguese. So
correct.
They need to speak via a translator app, much like 90 Day Fiancé. So if they want her to come to the U.S. and join their family, she's going to need a K-1 visa. And for that to happen, he's going to need to divorce Danielle so he can marry Roberta. Now, they have met her in person in Mexico. He's already been intimate with his future wife to whom he proposed on the trip. Danielle likes Roberta, but she still has concerns about moving forward with the divorce because she's admittedly jealous and she's worried that if he decides to just stay with Roberta, that she's shit up a crick because she's going to be left with no money. I felt like in the beginning when they were trying to sell us the story that this is a highly sexual husband because there are lots of shots of him like working out with weights and she's on the treadmill and she's looking at him in a way like, we're going to get it on as soon as the cameramen leave because you ask that of me every single day of my life. What were your thoughts?
It's a good question. I mean, well, first of all, I would say that when she said that he had approached her about getting divorced and had like printed off the papers a few times. Like apparently this guy is like quick to hop on LegalZoom and like decide that it's time to end the marriage. Like that for me is the first red flag. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of like papers being printed out so casually.
I didn't think you could print off divorce papers.
Correct. And then second of all, this is one of those like wishy-washy couples where they're like, we read in the Bible. And what they said is that that men had many wives and God loved those people. And that's why we've decided to practice polygamy. Like the rationale is so loose. Like there's no, like, it's like people in the Bible also like stoned women to death.
And killed their children.
So it seems like very unclear to us, like why they're so committed to this lifestyle.
I mean, I think also this is like arguably one of the first hot couples. I mean, maybe with the exception, in my opinion, the exception of Dimitri and Ashley, like a truly hot, like they're keeping it tight. They look good all the time. It's strange to me that they want to bring in a third.
You think they should be satisfied?
Yes, frankly.
I also feel like he's got like a Joel Osteen kind of vibe going. He dresses like him. He wants to be like him.
He really does.
Wait.
It's fascinating because I feel like he has the hopes of using that. I think maybe that the people were casting for 90 Day Fiancé were like, we think you're legit. You're almost too pretty for 90 Day Fiancé, but we've got this other spinoff that you're much better for. So are you willing to jump over there? And they're like, we just want to be on TV. I feel like Garrick thinks that this is an opportunity for him to either get a spinoff or start a mega church in Colorado. And that he is going to be able to bring in women from other countries and really blow it up that way. And he definitely sees merchandise in his future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know what sort of like commercial activities they have going on, but from the looks of their interior decor, I think there's more to be desired in terms of income. So merch is a good move for them.
Okay, so back for a third season, the Snowdens have not had the best luck. So they've been married for a decade, but want to live a plural life, which makes zero sense because there seems to be no reason for it. Their kids range from 3 to 8. Family is what proposed them into the polygamous lifestyle. It's been a 10-year-long search for the right sister wife. Now, 2 years ago, they met Vanessa. She moved to LA, which, by the way, they live in like the Valley, which is another when you're like, you clearly just want to be on TV. So they moved this woman out. They proposed to her. They have this wedding in Temecula. And all seemed well with Dimitri and Ashley renewing their vows. But Vanessa goes to Seattle on a birthday trip, and they believe it to give her pause to think about the lifestyle because she decided to end the union via text. Ashley was blindsided, especially by the method. Vanessa returns with her mom and sister, packs up all of her stuff and leaves. I know that people have reached out to her to go, what the hell happened? And she has said, I cannot, because of an NDA, disclose what happened. So let's just pretend we know what happened. What are your guesses?
Ooh, good question.
I'm shook by this NDA reveal. I mean, do we think that I go back and forth with Ashley. Do we think that Ashley just like, you know, instated a reign of terror the minute that they were husband and wife? Or was Dimitri the issue? I mean, I don't know.
I've heard rumors that Dimitri immediately wanted to pursue a third wife. And that is what caused all the tension. Okay. Like he wasn't cool to chill with two.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I feel like Ashley enjoys the idea of it because she just has a lot of laundry to do. And she's like, sure, if somebody can help out. I feel like he lives on another planet. Like he thinks that he wants to be a movie star because at one point I looked up his Instagram and he had a job title that sounded like it was made up. It was like metaphysical account director. And I'm like, what the hell is that? Given the fact that they can't seem to give you a legitimate answer to why they've chosen polygamy and their proximity to Burbank, I'm going to say that they're looking for this as an opportunity to, you know, kind of have a unique way of getting to Hollywood and becoming superstars that they believe they should be.
Are you really not convinced by the veracity of their spirituality, by the third eye on Ashley and all their children?
Yeah, like none
is that
of
what
it,
you're telling
it,
me?
It's like a potpourri of rituals where you're like, where did this come from? Well, they're not in a rush. They took over a year to heal, which I'm like, yeah, no, it was like the producers were like, hey, we're going to do another spinoff. And they're like, oh, that's awesome. We just found a girl. And they're like, shit, go find a girl. So this one is Crystalline. I believe that's how you say her name. She's 32. She's from South Africa. She's got two kids. They met on social media, which means they were DMing each other and have communicated for 5 months, though they've never met. She will be coming to visit in a few days. This is all new to her. She's never been to America or in a plural union. So this sounds like it should work out. What do you guys think?
Well, my favorite part of the episode was, one of my favorite parts was when she hinted at, or she basically blatantly questioned Dimitri's ability to handle three wives. Yes. Because Ashley and Vanessa were only singing Dimitri's praises, even when Dimitri was prematurely bedding Jocelyn in beginning of season two. And so I'm excited to actually see, Crystalline, is that her name?
Yes.
I'm excited to see Crystalline take on Dimitri because I think she's going to uncover his true character. Chandler?
I mean, I'm unsure because I don't know what woman would just take on like three more children, would move to another country and then, you know, become like the nanny to five kids.
Right.
That's exactly what it is. She's like a nanny who has to bone them a couple times a week. Okay. Right. Here's the next family. The Jones family has a very strange dynamic. So they're from Idaho. Tasha is actually Sidian's second wife, but she's assumed the role basically as wife number one because the first wife was like, this shit's crazy. I'm out. Peace. So they have three kids ages between 7 and 12 in the family from Sidian's past relationship, but only two live with them. So the couple met at her work and he immediately caught her eye, but he was already married at the time. He was honest about being married and attracted to her as well. And to be honest, he and his wife were looking to bring on another wife. She's like, this sounds cool. I'm up for it. When he told her that he was a polygamist, she thought it was a joke. But the more he talked about it, the more she embraced the idea. And again, eventually she met his wife, who's the mother of the youngest children. And then the wife was like, later. Like, I got plans. This is not part of it. Maybe because it was televised, unsure. But it seems like she's Mary Homemaker and this guy doesn't have a job. I feel like maybe he makes French braids, like necklaces or something. Like there doesn't seem to be any income coming in. I'm afraid this is like a 90 Day Fiance where they're going to become totally reliant on being TV stars on TLC to pay the bills.
Which if you look at the TLC, you know, stars' lifestyles, they don't seem to really go up very much. So TLC really is not, you know, putting out that much cash. By all accounts.
No, probably
not. Also, Sidian, in my opinion, Sidian does not look like a father. He looks like the older stepbrother.
The wayward stepbrother, you know.
Who's like, has to babysit for the afternoon. He's like, I guess let's go to the backyard and, you know, make s'mores.
The band practices in the basement.
Right.
Oh, for sure. I was thinking, like, she's making food and helping them with their homework. And he is sitting in the, like, Subaru that's full of smoke in the driveway.
I mean, the great mystery of our time that a man who wears 7 bracelets and 12 rings, or no, probably even, like, 20 bracelets, has attracted one sexual partner at all, let alone two, and is pursuing a third.
Okay, well, then we have the Clark family. They're from North Carolina. Jared, Kayla, and Vanessa make up the Clarks, and it appears to be moving day for them. So he wants to be closer to his job as he's a special needs teacher, coach, and personal trainer. I love that he's all of those things. Right. Now, he's been legally married to Vanessa for 10 years. They have four kids from 2 to 13, and Jared met Vanessa while he was in the military. The family practices a different form of polygamy where he is the king and he has queens. Okay, this guy came up with this shit on a deployment when he was like reading a book. He introduced the lifestyle 3 years ago to Vanessa and she said no because, you know, she had three brain cells for a minute and she believed it was all for him and that there were no benefits for him. But she realized it would give her someone to have her back and that solidified it for her. Just the idea of like, oh, someone's got my back. So 3.5 months later, Jared meets Kalia. She loves the idea of this life because she's never going to feel alone and she's always been a free spirit, God help her. So currently, she's on the outs with the family. Jared does not feel like she's acting like the queen she could be and should be. And this one, I was like, this is another one. I'm like, you guys are just making shit up to be on TV. This makes zero sense. What are your thoughts?
Okay, first of all, I think that what these men and their king complexes, unless you're providing me mm-hmm, as a woman mm-hmm. with a kingdom experience, a la large house, multiple cars.
Yeah, don't call me a queen after I've been moving furniture for most of the day. Oh, like that for is sure. the umbrage I took with this episode.
Yeah, that's a deal breaker for me. I think that they were probably like low-hanging fruit. Like they were like, we like them, but we don't know if people are going to be like believing this story. But then I feel like somebody like canceled at the last minute. They were like, turns out the elders were like, you can't film this. So they were like, we can't participate. And then they're like, shit, we got to get the Clarks now. So they're trying to make it work, but it all doesn't make sense. The only... No, I don't think any of them do. I don't think that the people of the polygamist world... I don't think people in polygamy really believe that any of these couples fully represent them. What are your thoughts?
Definitely not.
And that, I think, actually, I want to make an overall casting comment. So this season, we have primarily a young cast mm-hmm. of, you know, of people exploring alternative lifestyles. Whereas in previous seasons, we had salt of the earth, middle America, deeply religious folks.
Bernie.
Who were, I mean, yeah, let's talk, can we think about Bernie, soul. Like RIP. Mm-hmm. I have the tingles when I think about, like, you know, the true honorable man that Jeff Aldridge happens to be. So when I think about the current cast, it irritates me because I actually want to see like the weirdos in North Dakota that are mm-hmm. reading the Bible at 3 a.m. Yeah. I want to see yes. them practicing polygamy. I'm not interested in like polyamorous people on YouTube, which is what this crowd seems to be. I miss the days when the stars on these polygamy shows on TLC did not have Instagram accounts. Like that is how humble they truly right. were. Like it was authentic. It was OG.
Yeah, there is that. You're right. Like, do true polygamists in who live in caves or in like a ranch, do they mm-hmm. have access to an Instagram account? Are they on TikTok doing dance videos and making recipes? Probably not.
No, absolutely not.
No one who is devout is on Instagram. That's all I'm going to say.
Right. Right. That's a good point. Well, there's a lot to uncover this season. This was just the first episode, and we're already fired up. So we will probably all continue to watch, maybe with like one eye open, but we're going to continue watching, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, your podcast is right up everyone's alley because you're watching the same crazy stuff that I'm watching. So tell everybody where they can find your show.
We are the Pop Apologists Podcast. You can find us wherever podcasts are found. I will say I always joke that we didn't name our podcast correctly because it's a little hard to say and probably hard to spell for some people. But anyway, Pop Apologists. We're on iTunes and give us a listen. It will be a good way to waste a few moments of your one wild and precious life.
Yep.
I want to thank my guests, Joe and Casey and Lauren and Chandler. Remind you to hit subscribe and to leave a 5-star review. Check me out on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. My Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. You can also find that must watch list on my Instagram. You can join the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey, where we talk about all of the shows mentioned today and more. And you can find my Patreon page with bonus episodes at Patreon, patreon.com/KitCasey. In fact, I'm going to make a couple of those episodes public this week just so you can get a taste of what you would get if you joined my Patreon page. And then also I'm on Clubhouse all the time. I've got a group called What to Watch with Kate, and you can jump in there and hear me chatting all week long about the shows that I can't stop thinking about this week. As always, I'm wishing that you have a great week. I cannot wait to circle back with you on Friday because I have two episodes in the queue. One is with Julie Oliver from The Real World, the first season of The Real World, as seen right now on Paramount Plus, not in just the first season episodes, but the reunion all these years later of all those roommates coming together. So I get to ask her about her experience as one of the cast members of the first season of The Real World. And also with the filmmakers of Tina on HBO. So I can't wait to catch up with you, and I'm wishing you all a great week.
once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.